welcome to the Down to Dunk podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht, and today we have the best Thunder rider in the entire internet, Royce Young. How you doing?
I'm very good. See, that's why I just, it's like basically at this point, you have to do that intro because you
I like to just voice my beliefs at the beginning of podcasts, and that's one of my beliefs. So
just come out strong. Come out with the takes.
So there's a part, like, this, the off season has, it feels like it's already been forever. Feels, I mean, a lot of this stuff, I was talking with some of the other guys I do the podcast with, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm going to have Royce on today. What should we talk about? He's like, well, I feel like we've like beat this stuff to death already. But I haven't heard your opinions on some of this stuff. So I thought we would just kind of talk through basically the storyline of the off season. And most of it is, you know, what is Billy Donovan going to do? Like, how is he going to change his team? What are your kind of general impressions of Donovan? And then, you know, what direction is this team headed in?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's you're right about the offseason, first of all. I mean, it's like there's still like 4 months to go or something.
I know. It's so weird.
I don't know what a, I mean, yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do on a day-to-day basis. So I would say that, you know, obviously what people are kind of looking for or in the organization with Billy Donovan is to take what Scott Brooks had done and then take it to a next level, right? So – to me, you know, Billy Donovan, the skepticism that exists around him is that he doesn't have much or any NBA experience. And so, you know, how will he transition as a college coach to the NBA? I think a lot of people, some people when the hire was first made, I think some people were, for whatever reason, were not impressed by it. You know, everybody kind of has their pet favorites in these type of situations. It's the same way, like I'm sure we'll talk about the draft, and everybody gets like their pet favorite, but you really don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's like, oh, it's got to be Alvin Gentry. You got to hire Alvin. And it's like, you don't really know. You're not the guy interviewing Alvin Gentry. You're not the guy that has a vision in the – I mean, Billy Donovan may completely crash and burn, and Sam Presti has staked a lot of his reputation on doing this. At the same time, I mean, it's like, you know, I didn't really have a favorite in this search. You know, when Billy Donovan became kind of the front runner, I thought, man, that's a great coach. You know, I don't know if he's going to be the right coach, but Billy Donovan sure is a proven entity in coaching. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny to me because, and I've said that, I may have said this to you before, Andrew, but, you know, everybody got so excited about that Coach K rumor that lasted for like 2.5 hours.
Yep.
And everybody was like, oh my gosh, can you believe it? If they go hire Coach K, Coach K is so amazing. And there's no question about it. Coach K is maybe the greatest coach of all time. But imagine hiring Coach K at 49 years old, because that's really what Billy Donovan is. If you look at his resume in college, you know, he's won 2 national titles, 4 Final Fours. He has more wins than Coach K did at age 49. So, I mean, if Billy Donovan was going to stay in college coaching for the next 20 years, he was going to be that guy that was going to go for 1,000 wins, maybe win 1, 2, 3, 4 more national championships. Go to more Final Fours. I mean, people want to point at last season at Florida, where it was a pretty disastrous season, but they also lost 5 senior starters, and they were coming off a year that they won, what were they, 33-3 or 36-3, I think, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, and they went to the Final Four, and they honestly, they lost a game that they absolutely should not have lost. They lost to Kevin Ollie's UConn team. Yeah. So, you know, as I look at Billy Donovan, his main job is to, and this is what I've been told from you know, the Thunder front office, what they want him to do is to connect the team on the floor. It's not necessarily that they want him to come in and completely restructure everything that they're doing, because in a lot of ways you can't really mess too much with what the Thunder do well. I mean, you got to let Russell be Russell. You got to let KD be KD. You can't get too much in the way of that. You can't directly compare them to what Steve Kerr did with the Warriors either, because Stephen Curry is such a different type of player than a Russell Westbrook is. So, you know, I think it's on Billy Donovan to come in and just do a better job of connecting the 5 players that are on the floor at each time. And some of that will be some new offensive structure. I think that there's a lot of issues, and the Thunder knew this too with Scott Brooks. There were things that they were not accomplishing with Scott Brooks, the benchmarks that they wanted done, and not just, you know, factual things like win so many games, get to this point in the playoffs, do that, but just things that were happening on the floor in the practice gym that just weren't taking place the way that they were intended. And so, you know, it really came down to that they felt like that they just needed it. They needed a change. And Presti, I mean, not to buy into the Prestiisms of what he said, but I really do think it is as simple as they wanted to kind of re-stimulate the team because they were worried a little bit of kind of treading water and just saying, well, we've got these great players. Here's what we've done. You know, we can't just rely on that. We got to try to kind of, you know, reinvigorate ourselves.
Do you know any specifics on those benchmarks that you were talking about?
I mean, I would say this about some of them. It's more of like, you know, it's not like a specific thing, like in terms of, you know, be this good at offense, be in the top five. It was more, you know, I would put it this way. It was the issues that we all could see. The organization was seeing them too. Was, you know, things that were happening with the Scott Brooks team, whether it was defensive slippages, whether it was you know, they wanted to kind of restructure their offense. And I think I've written about this a number of times. They really wanted to do that. They wanted to, you know, kind of rehaul a lot of what they were doing offensively with a lot more offside, weak side movement, screening, passing, moving, and all that went out the door. Well, I think there's kind of a misconception that Sam Presti really has his finger both in the front office and on the floor. And that's really not the case. A lot of it is, you know, Presti puts the team together, and I think that he meets with Brooks, or he met with Brooks a lot, and they laid out a vision. But it was on Brooks to then implement that. And a lot of that stuff that I think that the vision of the organization was not getting implemented. And I think Scott Brooks just became very pragmatic with all the injuries, and then he saw it as like, let's just try to get through this. Let's just let Russell go wild. And I think the organization themselves saw it as a major missed opportunity to develop more of the roster. You know, and so like, you know, and I'm as guilty as anybody else that I'm sitting there looking at Russell Westbrook 38-14-12, and I'm saying, you know, this guy's a superhero. Look at what he's doing. He's trying to single-handedly carry this team to the postseason. And all that stuff was great, but I think the front office was more seeing that as, you know, Russell's being incredible, but we're missing an opportunity to develop the other, you know, 10 players in the rotation. And I think that some of that type of stuff kind of ended up, you know, I don't want to say that that's the reason that Scott Brooks wasn't brought back. I also think that Sam Presti's had a fascination with Billy Donovan and saw this as an opportunity to just make this move.
Yeah, I like what I've read about Donovan and everything, and I really like the way his staff is kind of shaping out. I think Monty Williams is a really good get. Have you been impressed with his ability to get guys on his staff? And then how do you see it shaping going forward?
Yeah, I think people might be more excited about Billy Donovan's assistant than Billy Donovan.
Yeah.
and for good reason. I mean, Monty Williams, you know, a lot of people can look at him and, you know, I think he did an incredible job in New Orleans. And, you know, just like Scott Brooks, he had his flaws. And but, you know, it's one of those things that there's some pretty hard facts that really back up Monty Williams and what he accomplished, taking a team from 21 wins that just lost Chris Paul to a team that won 45. And honestly, if not for a Stephen Curry miracle corner three, who knows how that series shakes out. I mean, obviously the Warriors are going to win the thing probably, but it could have gone to six games. It could have even gone to seven games. But that was such a gut punch in game three. So, you know, Monty Williams had that young group of players playing hard, and he's one of those coaches that his players respect the heck out of him. They love him to death. They play hard for him. He was not great X's and O's. You know, when he was in Portland, he was kind of known as a defensive guy. He was kind of part of Nate McMillan's staff that, you know, was seen as the defensive coordinator. And those Trailblazers team did have some pretty good defenses. Obviously, that didn't translate all that well in New Orleans. For all the defensive talent I think that the Pelicans had, they should have been better than they were on the defensive end. I think that they were, I don't know, I think 21st defensive efficiency or something like that.
Yeah,
so, you know, but I think the thing is that people look at a coach and they may not get excited about Monty Williams. Like, oh man, Monty Williams is that great. But some guys are great head coaches and some guys are fantastic assistant coaches. And my guess is that Monty Williams spends a year or two in Oklahoma City before somebody's banging on his door again, okay, trying to get him to come be their head coach, because it's just like Alvin Gentry's reclamation project in Oakland. That guy's bounced around all over the place as a head coach, most recently in Phoenix, and he was pretty unceremoniously fired by the Suns. He went to the Clippers as Doc Rivers' associate head coach, and now he's obviously on Steve Kerr's staff. And now, before the Pelicans hired, he was just this hot name in coaching. It's like, man, look at Alvin Gentry. You got to go get Alvin Gentry. My guess is that that happens with Monty Williams in the next couple years.
Yeah, I totally agree. And one point I wanted to make is that I like that Presti is kind of swinging for the fences with Donovan. Because, like, you know what you're going to get in guys that have coached in the NBA before. And I'm just not a big fan of recycling coaches. It typically just doesn't work. And you look at the two head coaches in the NBA Finals right now, and a lot of people just shovel crap on David Blatt. But he, like, if you actually are watching the game, like, he's making adjustments in-game that are fantastic. Like, he's a very good coach, and they made a really nice hire. And then this obviously the same thing on the side with the Golden State, and then you look at Budenholzer. I mean, I just think that you bring new blood in, and you just see if it works. I just think it's just smarter to swing for the fences, and that's why I don't understand like the Scott Skiles hire and stuff like
right.
that. It's like, why, like, we know we've seen this movie before. Like, let's try something different.
Right, and I completely 100% agree with that. And you know, people wanted to throw out, you know, I can't tell you how many times that I had to like headbutt a wall because people threw out, I can't believe it. Why didn't they go after George Karl? Like, oh my gosh. Like, Scott Brooks accomplished more than George Karl, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Like George Karl, it's nothing does more for a coach's reputation than after they've been fired and they're out of the game for a little bit.
Yeah.
Give it a couple of years. If Scott Brooks sits out, honestly, this may be why Scott Brooks is going to probably sit out this year and not go get hired, is because people will start talking about him. They'll start reflecting on his Thunder teams. They'll start looking back and they'll say, hey, he's a pretty good coach. You know, he's a hot candidate out on the market. Yep.
They'll bring up his record and, you know.
Right. He went to the finals. He had 3 out of 4 Western Conference finals. You know, I mean, so, you know, it's the type of thing that I don't like recycling coaches either, because I think that what you're looking for is not necessarily, you know, just, you know, what has this guy done here? But it's more of, you know, what can you bring to the future team that you're going to be with? And I think Billy Donovan does have a vision. And I think that he's the kind of guy, you know, if you look at his Florida teams too, they didn't win just one way. This is not a team that was like had this just, you know, set in stone identity of you know, they play fast or they play defense or he won different ways with different types of recruiting classes.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that really impressed the Thunder, is that, you know, he could win with 5 seniors. He could win with 2 big guys in Noah and Horford. He won with playing Chandler Parsons as a stretch 4. So, you know, he's kind of a guy that can adapt and adjust. He's the kind of guy that I think will keep up with current trends in the NBA. And that was a flaw of Scott Brooks, I think, is that Scott Brooks was a little bit kind of entrenched in the old school style of NBA. He was resistant towards advanced stats. He was resistant towards, you know, the concept of positionless basketball. And I think Billy Donovan is a little bit more of a forward thinker. And that's really what Presti is. I mean, Presti is the definition of that. I mean, he's the guy that's always looking to try to find something just a little more cutting edge, a little bit more of a competitive advantage. So I think that, you know, as you look at teams that recycle it, like Scott Skiles, I mean, that's a great one to bring up because, I mean, and plus that's a Presti guy, Rob Hennigan. I mean, nothing shows that Presti and Rob Hennigan were not cut from the same cloth quite like that, because, I mean, Scott Skiles, I don't know what you're necessarily getting there, because, you know, people want to point out, you know, why didn't they go after Thibodeau? Why didn't they go after this guy? Why didn't they go after this guy? Like you pointed out, a lot of the best recent hires in the NBA have been guys that were given a shot, and that you could look at their resume, you could look at their track record, you could look at who they studied under or who they knew or what coaching tree they're from, and you could see that this guy has the potential to be something special. I mean, it's similar to making a draft pick. You don't have the answer, but you can do all your homework on this guy, and you can say, look, I've seen Carl Anthony Towns work out. I've seen everything. I've interviewed him. I think this guy's going to be special. We're going to take a gamble, and we're going to see if we've got a franchise player. And I think hiring a head coach is kind of the same way.
Yeah, totally. Another trend is this playmaking four. Ever since, you know, it was written about by Zach Lowe, everybody's talking about it. Do you think that Kevin Durant is going to be the playmaking four for this team? In that, not that he doesn't have to be the only – he doesn't have to play – traditional power forward, because, you know, Serge Ibaka's skill set really, I mean, he's a wing player on offense.
Right.
So do you think that Kevin Durant will be kind of a playmaking four this year, or seen that way?
I would imagine so. The complication to me with that And I mean, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. A lot of people say having, you know, exceeding amounts of depth is a good thing. But to me, they run the risk of a logjam is that, you know, you can only have really two of Durant, Ibaka, Cantor, and Adams on the floor. And, you know, who's the odd man out? And, you know, we all know, I mean, you know it as well as I do, Andrew. I mean, Kevin Durant at the four is a good thing. And it's a really good thing on both ends of the floor for the Thunder. They can switch everything. And they can really create mismatches offensively. So, I mean, that's something that I think that Scott Brooks did it some, but I think that, you know, as they look to try to kind of transition into doing different things, that's something that they hopefully will do more of. But at the same time, that means that you're either playing Ibaka at the five, Cantor at the five, or Adams at the five. And so you've got to sit two good players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, that's the type of thing that becomes a little bit, you know, complicated. To me, obviously, having a guy, it's become very clear in today's NBA as you watch these teams play that being able to run your offense through multiple players and multiple actions and have multiple triggers on that end of the floor, because I think that that's what makes these special offensive teams like the Warriors, like the Spurs, that they can, you know, if the first action is shut down, the Thunder are basically a 1-2 action team, or that's what they have been. It's, you know, they run their first set, and that's typically shut down. Then it's, you swing it to Ibaka, and Ibaka's either got a, you know, because a lot of times that's the position Ibaka's in. He's kind of the safety valve for a Westbrook pick and roll. Mm-hmm. And he's got two options. He can either shoot it or he can swing it to somebody else. I mean, he's not the kind of guy that's going to do something. You do that same type of thing with Draymond Green. You do that with Blake Griffin. You go down the line, you know, all these power forwards, you do it with Boris Diaw. I mean, he's a multiple threat option from that spot. He can, you know, create for himself. He can shoot. He can drive. He can kick. I mean, that type of stuff. I think having multiple players on offense is something that's very, very effective in today's NBA. And, you know, the Thunder have kind of taken a different approach, which I think it could be successful. I don't think we really have enough evidence to really know one way or the other. But, you know, they took the approach of let's have two high level offensive players in Westbrook and Durant. One offensive player that does one thing really, really well, Serge Ibaka, and that's shoot. And then two defensive one-way type of players in Adams and Robertson. That lineup was really good, but at the same time, I don't know if that really fits in today's NBA. I think the Thunder are kind of swimming upstream in terms of what's trendy in the NBA with those type of lineups.
Yeah, I agree. Do you think, though, that you could play Cantor and Ibaka and Durant, but offensively, you know, I think that Ibaka could be more of a three.
Mm-hmm.
And then on defense, you switch everything back. And that could be problematic in transition. But
yeah.
I don't know. There's just this – I feel like this is one of the more versatile teams in the NBA for this next season. With the addition of Enes Kanter and guys like that, I think that they can play really any way they need to.
Right, exactly. And I think that may be another reason that they made this move to Billy Donovan is that he is a little bit more of an adjuster. And that you hand Scott Brooks this toolbox with all these tools in it that can do so many different types of things. And I'm not sure that he would have necessarily been able to really take advantage of all of it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that may have been another big reason that they felt like that they needed to make that move is because, you know, like you said, you have four different really, you know, front court lineups that you could throw out there, and they all need to make sense in different sort of ways. You look at the way that the Warriors have used their super small ball lineup in this postseason. I mean, it's been brilliant the way Steve Kerr hasn't just rolled it out there. He's used it situationally when he could really take advantage of not just who the Cavs have had on the floor, but, you know, who the Grizzlies had on the floor, who the Rockets had on the floor. So that's the same type of thing is that, you know, and you have to have the sort of team that's not going to have any, you know, a whole lot of ego about them. That's going to sit there and say, I can't believe I'm not on the floor right now. So, you know, I mean, there's so many different options that you could go with. You know, I know that one, I think Scott Brooks was hoping to use it at some point, probably in the postseason, which I thought was going to potentially be a cool lineup. It could have been a complete flaming disaster, but to go super big, he had talked about, you know, you go Adams, Cantor, Ibaka, and Durant with Westbrook, and you play zone. And, you know, I mean, that's crazy amounts of length on the floor. I don't know if you could get to every shooter, but I mean, that's the type of stuff that I think that you got to be thinking about when you have all these type of options.
Yeah, I'm excited. but also a little disappointed because it's going to be a very long time before we get to see anything right. like that.
We're going to read way too much into the first preseason game.
I know.
First preseason game is like, oh my gosh, Mitch McGarry played 22 minutes.
Yeah. this roster currently, the math doesn't work because Huesis is supposed to be on this team.
Right.
And we're going to bring in a first round pick. There's just too many guys.
Right.
How do you see this shaking out? You know, come October, who do you see, you know, not on this roster?
I think that to me, Perry Jones's time seems to be on life support. At least it should be. And it's funny, you know, I don't know if you saw it yesterday that, you know, Deion Waiters tweeted that he's getting number three back.
Yep.
And everybody's first, you know, thought was like, okay, I mean, it makes sense. You got to get rid of somebody. It's going to be Perry Jones. And like immediately, like somebody from the Thunder, like got in touch with me, like, no, Perry's just changing his number. They're not trading. It's like, so I think that they're really sensitive about that.
Yeah.
But obviously something's got to give here. Either you trade the pick or you don't re-sign Singler. I mean, that's been something that I think is a possibility, depending on how highly they think of Josh Eustace. You know, you could save yourself some money in terms of, you know, because Singler, for as inconsistent or just plain bad as he was in Oklahoma City, the guy's a good player. I know I've said that a lot. I mean, really is. He was really good in Detroit for a few years. I think he's a good player. I think he was in a little bit of a difficult situation stepping into, you know, that guy didn't expect to walk in Oklahoma City and be starting for Kevin Durant. So, I think he was kind of put in a difficult spot. But, you know, I don't know how much he's going to get paid. 3 years. $9 million, something like that. Who knows? Whatever it is, he's going to cost you more than Josh Eustace would.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, if they think really highly of Josh Eustace, and they both, you know, they basically are a little bit redundant, I would think. Singler's obviously a much better shooter, but in terms of defense, if Eustace has come far enough, you could let Singler walk and you could, you know, bring Eustace up to replace him. Still, that gives you 15. So,
yeah.
You know, you could – trade Perry Jones for a second round pick. You could, if anybody's out there playing around with something and throwing Perry Jones or Jeremy Lamb's name out there for a first round pick, I think you're a little bit delusional at this point.
Yeah. Or to move up in the draft.
Yeah. The move up, you put the 14 in Jeremy Lamb and you move up and you get the six.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
I'd like to be on the other end of that call.
Yeah. No kidding. What about Novak? Do you think that they could maybe try to offload him?
Yeah, he's an expendable piece, right? I mean, he's definitely expendable because, you know, where does he really fit? As much as I love Steve Novak, and I've wanted that guy on the Thunder, you go back through the archives, I've, like, dropped Steve Novak's name in there, like, so many different times because I've always thought so highly of the white guy shooter. I've always loved that kind of guy. So even though, I mean, he can't play any defense, he's such a unique guy that he's, like, I have no idea what position he actually plays.
Yeah.
I mean, is he a stretch four? I mean, because he's like 6'9". So, like, I don't know if he's a stretch four. I don't know if he's a small forward, if he's a shooting guard. I mean, he can't guard anybody. So, I mean, he definitely does one thing really well, but he is kind of redundant with Anthony Morrow. So, he's definitely somebody that you could maybe move, but he's got a guaranteed deal, so that's kind of difficult to do. Or, you know, the other option is, which I don't think is that attractive to Thunder fans, is that you trade the pick altogether. You know, you just get out of this draft. And, you know, to me, that makes sense in some ways because this draft is not that important. Having a pick in 2017, 2018, those could be really important if things go bad and you don't have Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook anymore. You may be looking to restock and have some extra insurance for later on.
Yeah. I'd be pretty surprised if Presti didn't pick somebody. Because, I mean, every year I feel like we're always like, oh, it's time to trade the pick and get a vet in here. And then every year, like, he's taken somebody that nobody is talking about. I don't know. This summer is going to be it'll be interesting with the end of the roster moves.
And the crazy thing about some of those picks, Andrew, is that they've also, you know, we've seen them as like, oh man, what a waste of pick. He took Andre Robertson.
Yeah. Or
can't believe he took Mitch McGarry. And it's like all of a sudden these guys walk in and, you know, like, why didn't they take an impact player?
Yeah.
And like those guys in their first season or two seasons have been impact players. Yeah. So, I think a lot of it too is that, you know, there's some frustration. Scott Brooks wasn't entirely keen on playing young guys anymore. Maybe Billy Donovan will have a little bit of different perspective on that. But I don't know. You know, whoever it may be, I think that guy, especially if it's a backcourt player, that guy's going to have an opportunity to come in and earn minutes because nothing's nailed down back there.
Yeah. Let's talk about the draft. And you're right. It's a crapshoot. Like, nobody knows. I remember, you know, they drafted Steven Adams, and I was like, wow. Like, what a bust. Like, how could they have done that? You know, the draft just makes you look like an idiot before. But who do you like in this draft, and what kind of position do you see them drafting?
I mean, obviously, if there's a need on the roster, it's, you know, they like having 3-point guards, and plus DJ Augustine only has a year left on his deal. So, I mean, if there's a need, I think history would show us that Presti probably would prefer a point guard. The question is that they're kind of uniquely situated at 14, and with Cameron Payne, everybody's so high on him right now, you know, he may end up going in the top 8.
Yep.
You know, is there another point guard there that's worth taking? You know, Tyus Jones is too little to me to really use the 14th pick on. To me, he's nothing but a career backup. These are words that I know I'm probably going to be eating in like 5 years as Tyus Jones is an all-star, and everybody's like, how could you not pick Tyus Jones? It's like, not to go off track, but I had like this guy tweeting me a whole bunch yesterday. Can you believe Presti passed on Draymond Green? And it's like, people go back and they like look back on these drafts. They're like, how could you pass on this? It's like, because at that time, Draymond Green was not this Draymond Green.
Every NBA team passed on him.
Yeah.
Everybody
like,
did.
You go back and be like, how could you pass on Manu Ginobili?
Yeah, I know.
It's like, I don't know. Everybody did. You didn't really scout it. Like, at the time, everybody thought the Thunder, you know, had a gift from God and that Perry Jones fell to him at 29.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this lottery exactly. pick. This guy that could have been a top 5 pick is all of a sudden available at 29. What a miracle. So, I mean, yeah. Anyway, hindsight is stupid, especially when it comes to the draft.
It's the worst, yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, I mean, what's the kid from Utah? DeLon Wright.
Yeah. What about Jerian Grant? What do you think about him?
What is he, 6'4"? He's like 6'3", 6'4".
He's 6'5". He's big.
So he's big.
Yeah.
And he's a combo guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really good in the tournament. See, like, but again, is he worth the 14th pick? I mean, a lot of people have had him slotted, I think, late teens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't really know what they need. I don't know if I would just pick a point guard just because you know, you have a box that needs checked on the roster.
Yeah.
I think in this type of situation, you have a unique opportunity to go get a really good player potentially. For whatever reason, I've really been talking myself into Kelly Oubre. I don't know why. Yeah. I have no idea why.
Me too.
I just look at him. I'm like, man, he's long. He's 6'7". I think he could play shooting guard. He's got a decent looking shot. You know, it's like you don't want to really judge a college kid's shot and be like, well, he only shot, you know, I think Oubre shot like 34% from three or something like that. But like Kawhi Leonard couldn't shoot at all in college.
Right.
Jimmy Butler couldn't shoot at all in college. I mean, that is a learnable trait in the doing it professionally for a living, you can improve your shot. So, I mean, it's really about the tools that you have. And I don't know. I look at a guy like Oubre and I think, like, man, that could be that two-way guy, size, because Presti loves himself some size. So I kind of tend to take maybe the perspective to maybe just log jam your roster even more, but swing for the fences and try to find that two-way guy.
Yeah. And, you know, there's that strange log jam at two guard where – It's just like there's no guy that like really fits there that well anyways. So I feel like if you can find the guy for the future, like Kelly Oubre would be great. Or like a lot of people like Devin Booker because he's just a lights out shooter.
Right.
And just hoping that he can figure it out defensively.
But see, that's how I felt about and I mean, I like him too. He looks like a high level offensive player. And this is where you just never know in the draft. But I'm like, man, don't they already have Devin Booker on the roster? Isn't his name Jeremy Lamb? You know, I don't know. I think one Jeremy Lamb on the team is enough, but I don't know. I mean, Devin Booker could come in and he could improve rapidly, and all of a sudden he's a slam dunk.
What do you think about Jeremy Lamb on this team? Is he? I mean, I could see him gone, or I could see him even getting minutes this next year. I really have no idea what to think about him going forward.
To me, I mean, obviously, if he's on the team next year, this is make or break for Jeremy Lamb, because if there's an opportunity for that dude, it's right now. He's got a new coach. I mean, Scott Brooks obviously did not think very highly of him. And I think the front office still thinks pretty highly of Jeremy Lamb. I really do. I feel like I can say that confidently. I think that they think that Jeremy Lamb is going to be a good player. And I think Jeremy Lamb could be a good player. You look at how many guys have switched teams or something's happened. Jeremy Lamb is still a young guy that can still improve and figure it out. I think his demeanor hurts him a whole lot. It just looks like he doesn't care. But he could potentially be the best option to start at shooting guard, which is insane to say. But, like, you know, I don't think you can start Deion Waiters because Deion Waiters wants the ball in his hands. And, you know, you can't cut it up and divide it with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant out there together. Yep. So I don't think Waiters – and Waiters was not brought in to be a starter. I mean, he was brought in to be a sixth man. You know, you could obviously go defensive-minded with Andre Robertson, which is, you know, the most likely option. Who knows what Josh Eustace is. But, you know, you could start Anthony Morrall. But, again, I think that you kind of complicate things a little bit on the offensive end with Westbrook and Durant out there together. You know, you don't want to have Anthony Morrall wasting his minutes and not getting any shots. So, you know, if you look at it, it's like, well, Jeremy Lamb, if that dude could figure it out, he's 6'7", he's crazy long, he's a really good rebounder for his position. If that dude would just figure things out a little bit, he could be the two-way guy. But, you know, that's a pretty good shot in the dark at this point, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of ifs to get there.
Yeah, that was like 10 ifs.
What? Everybody has a very strong opinion on Deion Waiters, so much so that he has his own island. Right. Where are you at on him and his potential going forward?
I'm probably like in a paddle boat, like kind of like out, like looking at the island, thinking about like getting on it maybe. Like I've got the rowboat and, you know, the rows in my hand, and I'm like thinking about going up there. because like I watched the guy play and I'm like, man, you are oozing talent. Like, yeah. I can see it. And it, there are some nights you can tell that like it clicked and he fit out and he's going to go to the rim and he's going to finish and he's going to create. You know, everybody clowns on Deion Waiters because he's always got his hands up or he always wants the ball or that he's, you know, supposedly doesn't pass. I think the guy's actually a really good passer. I think he is really good getting in the pick and roll, going downhill, drawing a defender and passing. I think he's got a lot of quality traits in doing that sort of thing. his main issues are he cannot resist taking terrible shots.
Right.
I mean, he just cannot help himself. I mean, he's seriously like he's got like a mental disorder or something that like he cannot stop himself from like taking those shots. Even he'll stand in the locker room and look you in the face and say like, I got to quit taking those. And then he goes and takes 10 of them the next night. So, and he can't hit a three. I mean, he's not a good catch and shoot three guy, which is what the Thunder's offense typically creates a lot of, is that, you know, the Thunder are great at dribble penetration and attacking downhill. And so they create a lot of shots. And you know, honestly, I blame Presti for a lot of this. You know, I think he messed up big time bringing in Caron Butler because, you know, as good of, I think, as a mid-season signing as that was, you brought in a guy to completely misuse him because you brought in a guy, all of a sudden Caron Butler comes in and he's taking 5-6 threes a game. He's not a catch-and-shoot, knockdown three-point shooter. That's just not what he is. And, you know, Deion Waiters, he had so many opportunities to hit big shots off a catch-and-shoot. And, you know, for one, he infuriatingly would take a dribble sometimes, which is just the dumbest thing in the world, just because he can't help himself. And he just doesn't shoot him well. So to me, like, I think Waiters actually was quite encouraging on the defensive end. You could tell that. I think he competed really well. I think he can guard a couple positions. He uses his body pretty well. He's got great hands. I mean, he's got really good defensive hands. So, you know, I think defensively I wouldn't call him a plus, but I'd say he's a push. I mean, you can live with Deion Waiters on the floor defensively 100%. It's just about, you know, is he a negative or is he helping you offensively? And, you know, those games where he finishes with 14 points, but on, you know, 4 of 14 shooting and doesn't get to the free throw line and takes bad shots and basically has turnovers for possessions because he's fired up a step back long two. I mean, that's where it's just got to stop. And the game seems like it should be so much simpler than it is. But for whatever reason, I think Deion Waiters just complicates it.
Yeah, he does. I may end up in like a Castaway situation because I love Deion Waiters. I love his personality. I love the fact that there's just not a shot that he won't take. And I think that can be valuable in situations if you put him in the right role. He was put in a position where his usage rate was just way higher than it needed to be last season. And because we got to see him shoot so much, I think that ruined his reputation a lot. But if we can have an entire roster there and say, hey, you're the sixth man, And if you're hot, great. If you're not, you know, we have other options.
Right.
So I think in that context, he could be a very huge asset for the Thunder. But any more than that, I'm not sold.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because I think our evaluation of Dion Waiters is really a little bit unfair at this point, because, you know, and where he scored, I think he scored 33. Yeah, you're right. But I mean, he had free reign to basically play however he wanted to play.
Yep.
And that shouldn't be the way that Dion Waiters plays. And I don't think that that's going to be the intention next year. I think Dion himself knows that. It's the Thunder needed him to play that way. They needed another creator, another ball handler, another guy that could get his own shot. It couldn't just be Russell Westbrook every trip down the floor trying to set something up for somebody. So Dion Waiters, I think, was kind of forced into that. Probably, and he probably was like super excited about it too.
Yeah. He had to have been, yeah. Like,
man, is that what you need me to do? I'm more than happy to do. So, yeah.
Andre Roberson, he hasn't been able to shoot. There's nothing that leads me to believe he's going to be like, you know, Tabo and just show up and shoot 40%. Do you think he'll be kind of relegated to like a bench role stopper type of guy, or do you think that he's got a legit shot to be the starting two guard again?
I think he has a legit shot. He's an easy target because the air balls are just so, I mean, for the average fan, and I'm not dogging on anybody that, like, it's not like I'm some high level NBA thinker. I'm just like anybody else. But like, if you're not sitting there and you're not like watching him off the ball deny somebody, like, oh man, did you see how he denied Wesley Matthews that possession? Like, yeah. What you see is the fact that he airballed a three by like 3 feet.
Yeah.
So like it's hard to like forget that aspect of it. I mean, he's a complete negative offensively. And to me, Andre Roberson, I think in the regular season, here's the problem with him, I would say, is that in the regular season, I think night to night when teams are not spending, you know, all their waking hours preparing for you, scheming against you, I think you can live with Andre Roberson out on the floor. You know, and I think that he could be a plus in those situations, because you can throw him on the other team's best perimeter player and he can hound them all night, make their life difficult, because Andre Roberson is a very good defensive player. He does, you know, he's good in transition and he can rebound his position really, really well. The problem is that if you spend all season with him playing that position, and that's kind of the identity of your team, and that's the rhythm and flow that you get into, therefore you can't just change it up in the postseason, because we've seen it in the playoffs how easy it is to scheme a player out and to completely damage a team on the offensive end of the floor by exposing the fact that they have a complete one-way guy. The Warriors did that with Tony Allen. So, I mean, don't think for a second that the Warriors wouldn't throw Andrew Bogut on Andre Roberson, mm-hmm. and be able to go super small or do whatever they wanted and scheme Andre Roberson off the floor. And now the Thunder, you know, are set to scramble. Scott Brooks, I don't think, would have been willing to make that. I don't know. Maybe that's unfair, because he did make some changes in the postseason. He did start Caron Butler. He did start Reggie Jackson. But, you know, unless you are able to like completely adjust on the fly and have that ability as a team to, you know, recognize the issue and throw somebody else out in that position and still, you know, and then pick up where you left off, then I think you can live with it. But Andre Roberson, I mean, he's just flat out a minus on offense. And I think in today's NBA, like I said, I think two-way players are where it's at, guys that can do multiple things on both ends of the floor. And I think Roberson is a very, very high-level defender. But until he figures out his shot, I mean, it's just – I don't know what he gives you offensively.
Yeah. This whole discussion just leads me to believe that they need to go find this guy in the draft. You know, they have their chance this year. You're probably not going to be in the lottery for a while unless just terrible luck comes your way again and, you know, Durant leaves and Westbrook leaves. So I think, like, this is the time to go find that guy. And, if it's Kelly Oubre, great. If you think you can develop a guy like Devin Booker, even Cameron Payne, if he ends up falling, which I really – I think he's going to rise. I think Sacramento may even look at him as high as six. But I don't know. I think they just have to go find that guy that can play two spot.
And like you said, I think that Andre Roberson does have a place on this roster, because kind of the dirty little secret is that when you're going out and you're drafting these type of players, the Thunder are in a tough spot, because they're a developed team. Yep. I mean, this is the team that they are. And so, you know, if you're talking about an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid walking into the draft, none of them are walking into it saying, you know what I really want to be? I want to be like the eighth fiddle on a team, on a good team.
I want to be on the blue.
Yeah, where I have very little chance of getting a huge rookie level, you know, a rookie extension after my contract's up.
Yep.
I really just want to come in and be just a solid role player. I mean, so that's hard to find. And yep. The Thunder have found some of those guys before. And what happened? James Harden had to get traded. Reggie Jackson had to get traded. So, you know, when you do hit home runs on those guys, no player is like just settling in and being like, yeah, I'm totally cool being the role guy. Yeah, and so I think that's a little bit why the Thunder changed a little bit of their draft philosophy, going with Andre Robertson, going with Josh Eustace, because I think that they were trying to nail down who's a guy that's going to be a career role player,
yeah,
and can really just define his career as being a role guy. And I think Andre Robertson can be that. I don't necessarily think he should be a starting shooting guard where he's playing 30 minutes a game, but he still is very young and he still could get a lot better. So I think he's worth having on the team. I think he's definitely worth being able to have to throw out on the floor and use him in special situations, because it's tough to come by a young player that can still improve that's willing to be a role player.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think people that are saying like he shouldn't even be in the rotation, like, come on. Like, it's he is super talented. And if he can develop, I mean, he shot well on the road. Like, if he can learn to shoot well at home, too, he could be a really valuable player.
That was one
player.
Of the more remarkable stats. I can't remember what it was. I think he made 2 threes or something at home.
He made 2 threes at home, and then he was like 37% or something like that.
Yeah, he was almost 40% on the road. I actually, you know, I told him that in the locker room, and he couldn't believe, like, he had no idea. I figured he kind of knew or something, but like, he had no idea.
It's crazy. Royce, thanks for coming on the podcast again. Obviously, we can follow you at Royce Young. Read your stuff at ESPN, A Daily Thunder. Thanks for coming back on.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to the Down to Dunk podcast. You can find us at dailythunder.com and downtodunk.com. Follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast and ask us Twitter questions every Wednesday. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star iTunes review and your review will be read on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.